Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Yogi plays it for Salah. Nurkic a block, also a foul. Oh, my goodness. Hard ball by Mejri. Nurkic got in the middle.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Xavier Rhodes on the bench, not out there on third down and 10. And Foles able to get away and throw. Pass is caught. Jeffrey, touchdown.
Normally, a quarterback holds the ball this long. You are not going to get the ball down the field. And there's a double move on Terrence Newman.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Brady under center, second and goal. Bacon to White. Looking around. Has time. Throws it. Can he get the feet down? What an effort. Touchdown, Amendola.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080, The Fan.
It is 12:02 in the Rose City. It is time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080, The Fan. Brendan Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson. How we feeling today? On this very, very happy Monday post-AFC-NFC title game.
Well, there's a lot of things to feel good about today. Number one, our windows are now basically open, and we can see sunshine again in the studio. This is groundbreaking news for us. We're no longer in a cave, and I'm now looking at the river. So, A, that's a phenomenal start to the week. And B, one Brendan Sprague has a mullet. And it's fantastic.
It's fantastic. It's really not, though.
I walk in, and I walk down a hallway to get to our cubicle, and there's a long walk to get, but you can see Brendan from a ways away, and it's just the first thing that I spotted. I couldn't remember when you said you were going to do it, and first thing I see when I walk in the building today is you and your mullet. I just had to start laughing. It's a good look.
It's not the full effect, though. We need some Melrose fluff around the collar.
See, here's where I'm okay with it. Sprague did this on his own. We're like, randomly a month ago, Sprague showed up with like a half of a mullet. It's like, wait, what are you doing there? Why'd you shave the size of your head?
I got it started.
Yeah, you got it started. You want to see how it would look. And so you've basically been living, we haven't talked much about this on the air. You've basically been living with a mullet now for like a month. So if it were not for that and he just showed up like this on a Monday, I could see that argument. But for the fact that this has been a part of your life now. You just had your kid's sixth birthday this weekend.
I know.
Like you have family over, there's like festivities going on, and that's your haircut.
I took my daughter horseback riding with her and some of her friends yesterday out in the middle of the country.
I bet you fit right in with the horses.
I really did, to the point where one of the people in the stables looked directly at me and said, "Have you been horseback riding?" Didn't ask anybody else, just asked me.
I'm surprised they didn't ask you for help.
No.
Like another customer walking around. Hey, where do we get the saddle we're looking for? I don't work here.
So I've been thinking a lot about this haircut and how much I hate it. And then I came into work and I momentarily forgot that I had it. And I went up to Tubbs before the show and I said, "Hey, Tubbs, so-and-so about this meeting."
catch people off guard.
And he just looked at me and laughed.
Like, what are you doing?
And Swag came back this morning. You hadn't gotten there quite yet. So Swag comes back, and first thing he does, he starts laughing. Like, everybody that sees me, right, the first thing they do is start laughing.
All right.
Dusty's like, "You look very Park Rose today."
you have too many sleeves on today. I think we need to go sleeveless for the rest of the week. Can we get you a Brooks and Dunn t-shirt, perhaps?
So I was thinking, because I like
Billy Ray Cyrus.
Yeah, there you go.
I like to be casual, not business casual, but casual at work. Friday is kind of my do whatever I want clothes-wise day here. I'm thinking Friday I'm going to put an earring in. I'm going to rock a cut-off flannel shirt.
Okay.
And maybe some jorts.
Jorts, yeah, you got to go with jorts.
I'm thinking about doing that Friday.
Is there any look that's more white trash than jorts, a cutoff flannel?
One earring.
One earring and a mullet. I don't know if anything tops that.
Maybe I can do dye my mullet blonde.
Okay, you go blonde tips.
So we're just all in on
peroxide Friday. In that bad boy.
Yeah, we're all in on Friday because I'm shaving my head next.
Okay, so you're just going to go short hair after this and just even it all out?
Yeah.
Because you could just go like army cut. You could just trim the top up and just have a little top.
I think we need something though because your hair lays so flat on your head.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very very conservative. I think we need maybe a faux hawk action up front.
God. Okay.
You need something to draw major attention to the fact I am wearing a mullet.
What if I
Because you're trying to like pass it off like I'm like fulfilling my bet, but
I'm cool. I'm from Portland. This is the new look.
Because your hair's not long. It doesn't, you don't have any fluff coming off your neck. It's still pretty short.
Yeah, it's not curled up quite yet. It's not long enough on the bottom. What if I, on Friday, I decide to do it up and I have all of it blonde?
I mean, that's a grand slam right there.
Right?
I'm not going to say
right
no
there.
To that at all.
I'm sorry.
That's special right
sorry
there.
Sorry, I got to leave early on Friday for that.
Yeah. You're getting zero complaints out of this guy, if that's your look.
Would that fulfill everything?
Hey, I already think you've fulfilled it. But if you want to go all blonde and you want to keep going, you've embraced this, and I enjoy that.
Yeah, on Friday, we need to do something special.
I'll do something special for Friday. I'll text a sister-in-law. I'll say, I need you to dye the hair. Let's get it going. Friday's going to be fun.
The only other examples we've got in that could be more white trash, somebody texted in a Steve Austin sleeveless shirt. Get a little 316 on your chest.
Okay.
Or a gold chain.
I'll do the sleeveless shirt. I have a sleeveless shirt.
Yeah, he needs to go muscle tee.
Muscle tee.
You can only do the gold medallion if you have a,
Do I go cross or do I do Jewish
sweater.
Star? What's my cross here? Or what's my necklace of choice?
No, I think medallion.
A medallion?
Yeah, something.
Is a medallion white trash?
I don't have necklace at all, so.
You don't have any chains?
I don't have any chains.
Enough. Well, if you're out there wondering, like, when can we see this, I have tweeted out a photo. At Dirt and Sprague on Twitter. You can go find it there.
And there might be some news about that, by the way, but we can't.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll keep you up to date on
I'll retweet it out on the old Tennessee the Fan, so
yeah,
there
for
the masses.
We'll spread it around, and you can also get a look at the window. It's like, as Justin Hopkins, friend of the show, said, this is Deep Thoughts by Brandon Sprague. You're like looking out onto the river, pondering life, what this all means. What are we doing here?
I did see that by Hopkins. That was hilarious. We got a good show today. There's a lot to discuss besides the mullet. I want to point this out. I kind of would just lead with this.
Okay.
We were 4 minutes and 58 seconds exactly.
Oh, God, don't remind me.
Away from a Blake Bortles, Nick Foles Super Bowl. 4 minutes and 58 seconds from you and I today.
Talking about that game.
Talking about Blake Bortles and Nick Foles as your two representative quarterbacks in this year's Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That hit anybody yesterday? Because I was watching the first game at a sports bar. And then I watched the Minnesota Philly game at a buddy's house.
What was the cheering balance of the first game at the end? Because that was a good finish.
Well, everybody was, most people there, there were a couple Pats fans.
Okay.
And then I think there was one Jags fan, although I don't know the legitimacy of him.
Right.
But he was sitting at the bar. Of the entirety of the bar, most people were rooting for Jacksonville. And then at the end, I think everybody was just in on a great ending to a good football game.
Just give me a score here. Let's see if something crazy could happen.
Right.
Because it was, it's funny. I was thinking the same exact thing as that game went into the half and this Jacksonville had a lead late. That was my thought process. And it was really weird. And I'm almost ashamed to admit this. I found myself late in the first game rooting for New England. I wasn't ready to accept the reality of Blake Bortles being a quarterback in the Super Bowl and having to watch the Jaguars play in the Super Bowl, and I found myself rooting for Tom Brady.
Wow.
I feel shady to admit it. I need to take a shower now. It's awful. I love seeing them lose, and that was the strange balance of enjoying watching them lose but then not wanting the reward to be a Jacksonville Super Bowl appearance. It was strange.
Yeah, I'm kind of ashamed of you. Because
as much as
I admire Brady and what New England does, I was still sitting there going, please, 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 please.
How would that reality have played out? We would be sitting here today talking about Blake Bortles versus Nick Foles.
True.
And I will throw this out. I will throw this out there. Let me add this to the conversation. That would be the least anticipated Super Bowl in forever. Name me another Super Bowl that if we were sitting here today knowing in 2 weeks it was going to be Jacksonville and Philly without Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
Name me another Super Bowl that you would have been less excited for that you can think of off the top of your head.
And like today's
league? In the last 10, 15 years, any of the matchups going in.
The only one that I can think of. Now, I don't quite remember the media conversation because I was a bit younger. I had no excitement, and I knew exactly what was going to happen when the Ravens played the Giants. Because that was a year that nobody saw the Giants beating the Vikings.
And they smoked them.
Smoked them 41-0 in the NFC title game. And I remember sitting watching going, wow. But you knew nobody was beating that Raven defense. I knew that. I was much younger. I knew that. So I don't know if it gets to Bortles Foles level.
Okay.
That's the only one on the top of my head that I can think of. Maybe 85 Bears in New England matchup. Most people knew the Bears team was not going to be scored on.
Mm-hmm. Was the Bucks Raiders that hyped?
It was because it was Gruden against his former team.
True. Rich Gannon was the MVP. Yeah. They had Jerry Rice and Tim Brown.
And then you had the offensive linemen go AWOL in Mexico. Barrett Robbins. Raiders.
The only other one that I could think of, and this was just personally for me, was Colts and Bears.
That's a good one, too, because you had Grossman versus.
There was no doubt in my mind.
Well, the big storyline, it was the first time two African-American head coaches met in the Super Bowl. That was the big storyline.
Yeah.
And then it ended up pouring down rain in that game.
It ended up raining like in Miami or wherever it was played. But outside, I mean, and that's what I'm saying. So I know it was dirty to root for New England, and we all wanted to see, you know, unless you're a Patriots fan, you want to see them lose. I totally get that. At least they saved us from Jacksonville, Philly, because that would have been a disaster.
So after everything we talked about last week, and there may be listeners out there that are completely agreeing with you, after everything we discussed, you still sat there on Sunday in the first game
and wanted New England to win.
Wow.
I did.
Okay.
Because the reality was sinking in. Blake Bortles is going to the Super Bowl, and I'm not okay living in a world where Blake Bortles is playing in a Super Bowl.
Okay. We have a lot of the old football to get to today. We'll mix in some Blazers. Blazers have won three straight games after losing three straight. They play Denver tonight, and our buddy Mark Stein, New York Times, reporting that they're involved in a juicy trade rumor. So we'll get to that today. We do have some Philadelphia Eagle fans quite enjoying their victory. We have one Viking fan who didn't so much enjoy watching his team look terrible.
I'm curious how many Eagles fans either didn't go to work today and called in sick or showed up with a massive hangover.
I'll go 98% there, Bob.
All right.
On either one. Doesn't matter. So we'll get to that. But a lot of NFL talk today. We're on Twitter at Dirt and Sprague, at Theodore Johnson and at Brandon Sprague. We have a lot of poll questions, and I want to tee those up coming up next.
I went ham on the poll questions today.
You did. So we'll give you the poll questions, and then we'll just start with the first game, Jacksonville, New England. What did you think? Are you into the conspiracy theory? And were you rooting for New England to pull out a victory as well because you didn't want to see Bortles in the Super Bowl? That's next. Dirt and Sprague with you. Happy Monday on 1080 The Fan. Quick update for you. Sprague's last ride, P1s, remember that one? With dogs? I might be having another one. Somebody else wants me to take their dog in because they can't handle taking it in to be put down. So Sprague's last ride might end up actually being a business opportunity.
Oh, no. You're going to end up depressed. It's going to be a bad thing. Don't go down this road, man.
Got to make that money.
You're going to start crying about some dog you've never met before in your entire life. You don't know anything about him.
Yeah, that may be so. Hey, we got poll questions today. What are they?
Okay, hold on. Let's just set up the tease for the next segment because it's going to take the whole segment.
Let's do this. You're right. Just do the football ones.
Okay, just the football ones?
Yeah.
Okay. The football ones read, what team is more likely to return to the AFC/NFC title game next year? Is it Minnesota or Jacksonville? Who are you rooting for simply in the Super Bowl, Philadelphia or New England? And then which quarterback is more likely to start for their respective team next year? Blake Bortles in Jacksonville or Case Keenum in Minnesota?
Okay, so there's our football ones. You can vote at Dirt and Sprague on Twitter. Let's start with the AFC title game. This one was a pretty good one. You got your right mix of offense and really good defense. Jags dominated time of possession 35-24, but it didn't matter because they fought in New England 24-20. What do you think about this game?
I think it's just another feather in the cap of Brady and Belichick. Unfortunately, for the folks that wanted to see them lose, this was a game. It felt like Jacksonville dominated most of the first half. Outside of that opening drive, New England got down there, kicked the field goal. Outside of that, Jacksonville was in control. They were moving the ball. Blake Bortles played well once again. I thought the coaching staff did a great job, not only in play action, but getting him easy looks. Wasn't throwing the ball a ton down the field, but he was extremely efficient. Fournette got it going on the ground. They were in complete control of that game. Gronkowski goes down. But even as all of that was happening, I don't know if you guys had that same feeling, even as all that was going on, It felt like it was just a matter of time. Give New England a couple of series. They'll find their way back into this game. And there they were at the end. And I think you look back, if you're Jacksonville, and you kick yourself for a couple of mistakes. The play calling in the second half, I wasn't a huge fan of. Blake Bortles couldn't come up with those one or two big plays that he needed late in that game. But really, I think, and I know a lot of people have mentioned it, but it's easy to point out, the swing for me was not calling a timeout and taking a delay of game penalty. They converted the third down, didn't call the timeout, and said they'd get pushed back 5 yards. They hand New England the football back, and that is coaching 101. And it's the reason why Belichick continues to win matchups like this, because you have to see that. You have to know the situation. You have to call a timeout in that, and maybe they end up scoring. New England doesn't at the end of the first half, and it's a different outcome.
So one thing that really stuck out with me with Jacksonville, I agree with you on the delay of game. That was at the end of the first half.
Yeah.
They had two timeouts.
And the game was 14-3, I believe, at the time.
Yeah.
And they had the ball right around midfield with a chance to score.
And I believe on that play, they picked up a first down,
they did.
But they came back.
It was third and seven or third and eight, I want to say. They picked up a first down, but there was a flag on the field for delay of game.
So that happens, and you're like, okay, there's a blunder there. New England gets the ball. They score. I also didn't like 55 seconds to go. You probably aren't guaranteed to do much. You had some timeouts. They didn't make an effort to even push the ball down the field. They just took a knee and were gladly walking into halftime. What was it? 14-10.
14-10.
You're on the road, and I know they did that against Pittsburgh. You know, they had that good start against the Steelers, and the Steelers kind of surged back a little bit and started to show some life.
Mm-hmm.
They did the same thing last week. They took a knee, and they went in the locker room happy. You have to adjust, and I think that's a learning experience for somebody like Doug Marrone, who had such a good season as a coach. When you're on the road in Foxborough, even though your team is playing really well defensively and your offense is clicking and playing pretty decently, you can't be passive. And so 55 seconds, I like the opportunity there to try and score. If you don't and you punt, okay, I get the other side of the argument. Well, you give New England some time
left. Right, then everybody would criticize you today for that.
But let's not act like the defense was not this really special group. I know statistically in some areas they were not perfect. But, and I want to give proper credit to this, I'm driving around Sunday morning, early Sunday morning, mm-hmm. and I'm listening to Mike and Rashad, and their producer, Jesse Asman, had a really good list of where they stack defensively against historical defenses. They were better than the Seahawks Legion of Boom in 13, the 85 Bears, the 2002 Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
They had beaten all those teams in like two or three different categories. So they weren't lights out.
Right.
But they were a pretty damn good group. And even if you give New England the ball back with 40 seconds.
Got to trust them.
Take a chance.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know about the play calling, how much different it was in the second half. I know they didn't do much. But those were two things that really stuck out to me. The delay game and then just kind of punting on the end of the first half. Here's Doug Marrone at the end of the game and kind of just summing up how he and the Jags feel after that one.
If you think about it, probably the more I think about it, the more it'll hurt. You know, in a mortal way on my mind, you know, about what you could have done better. I mean, as everyone in that room right now, everyone in that locker room is thinking, you know, what could we have done a better job of, you know what I'm saying, to win the game? I mean, you know, so it's tough. I mean, you know, I mean, it, you know, outside of, God forbid, someone passing away that you feel, you know, close to, I mean, this is probably as close a pain that you'll have, you know. This is the pain that you deal with when you lose football games. Something that we've got to deal with, and it hurts, and it stays with you for a long time.
Yeah, so Doug Marrone clearly pretty upset, as the rest of the Jaguars are, that they fall to the New England Patriots. I wanted to point a couple things out. The Bortles in Jacksonville were 10-0 when Bortles doesn't throw a pick. Yeah, that got snapped.
Yep.
And you kind of look back on Jacksonville. I mean, they had their moments.
They did.
And give proper credit to Stephon Gilmore. That play
was an incredible play at the end of the game.
I mean, he misses. If he just jumps just a little too early, that's a touchdown, mm-hmm. and that's a game. Jacksonville is going to the Super Bowl.
Or Bortles puts another 2 or 3 inches on that ball,
but
it's a touchdown.
I'm in complete agreement with you, my man. When they pushed it to 20-17, you just didn't feel confident Jacksonville was going to score. They weren't going to get the go-ahead touchdown.
Yeah.
You felt like what was going to happen is what happened. A punt, Brady gets the ball, goes down the field methodically, boom, touchdown, they were going to win.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the end of the first half. It was interesting to watch them not be more aggressive in that situation, because New England's offense really couldn't do anything. Outside of, as I mentioned, the opening drive and then the touchdown after the penalty, that they got the break from Jacksonville. They, outside of those two drives, their offense did nothing in the first half. Brady was under pressure. He was uncomfortable. He even tried to scramble a couple of times. They did a great job of doing what you have to do to beat Tom Brady, and that's getting pressure up in the middle and not having to blitz to get to him. So you have to trust your unit at the end of the first half. I agree with you there. And then, you know, the criticism about them getting too conservative is what I saw a lot of in the second half. And there were chunks of that. It's funny, though, because they even had a drive where I felt the exact opposite. I want to say with about 5 or so minutes left, they were still up, and they had a drive where they ran the ball on first down, got stuffed for a 1 or 2 yard loss, and then threw 2 incompletions and stopped the clock. And instead of running what you could have been, what, a minute and a half if you just let the clock trickle down, and you could have taken it down to about 4 minutes. Not saying it makes a difference, but it's funny, for all the criticism I've heard about, they got too conservative. There was that one drive where they threw the ball 2 out of the 3 times. One of them was almost a pick, and they were both incompletions. They stopped the clock twice, and they kicked it right back to Tom Brady. But we're all talking about how Jacksonville blew it and how they had their chances. I hate to do this because we're so tired of seeing them win, and I understand everybody wanting to root against them. There is an appreciation of greatness for me. And whenever you watch New England go out and do what, again, they did on Sunday, you're just simply reminded of it. How good they've been for 18 years, how many different teams have gone in there with the chance to win, thinking they were going to win, having a halftime lead. And here comes Tom Brady with a couple of minutes left in the fourth quarter with 14 points on the board. They found a way to do it again. And that, to me, was just as much of a comeback as it was a meltdown by Jacksonville.
Somebody else said, for me, not letting Miles Jack return that strip fumble and calling the play dead, that's potentially 6 points that got taken away from Jacksonville. That play, I thought that was a fumble watching that live, too, the way he reacted, and then you watch the replay.
That was weird on the replay, too, because I thought he almost had regained control against his body.
The way he pinned it against his body.
That was a strange call.
To me, that was kind of a swing. Like, one way or the other, I don't think there's a wrong call there.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was touched after he grabbed the ball away, though, because they're on the ground. So if he's being touched and he has the ball, he can't get up and go.
That was the weird thing about that call, is that he picked it up, but did Deion Lewis come into contact with him at any point while he's on the ground?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. And then there's one play specifically that really stands out late in the second half, and I want to bring it up real quick here, because all the blunders and people go into the penalty conspiracy thing, this possession specifically to me stuck out. With about 2 minutes and some change, Jacksonville had the ball, and I don't know how many people remember this. Blake Bortles threw it down the left sideline. Leonard Fournette was running a fade.
Yeah, I remember it.
And the pass drops, but man, when I watched that replay, I don't know what the explanation is from Fournette. It looked like he could have dove or put his hands on it. It didn't look like that pass was bad. I thought that was actually a really decent ball by Bortles.
Everybody in my house yelled the same thing. How do you not go for that ball in that situation?
And if he catches it, I mean, they're at least in field goal position to maybe get a field goal that ices the game, but he didn't, and they come up short on that drive.
Right.
And you're sitting there going, man, that's one of a few things you're going to remember and go, should have changed or should have done something different. And New England, of course, capitalizes.
Yeah, you go back and you watch the film, you kick yourself on that for the whole offseason. I didn't buy too much into the ref conspiracy theory stuff. It was funny that the judge...
6-1 or 10-1 in that, flags?
That was the only thing that raised an eyebrow for me. It was only one penalty being called on New England and 6 against Jacksonville. The ref coming up and shaking Tom Brady's or patting him on the back after the game. That... I think you see that a lot. You just point it out because it's New England. They go congratulate the winning team off. And I didn't have any problem with the pass interference calls. And the Miles Jack one was tough. I get the anger, but in a bang-bang situation like that, where you have two guys rolling around on the field and the ball was loose and you're not even sure if it was out, that's usually what referees do in that situation. So I'm not gonna throw conspiracy theories out on that one.
The final run, real quick, and we'll go to the NFC title game. The final run by Lewis, it was third down, and I want to say it was 8. And Lewis ran on the left side and got the game-clinching first down.
Off the edge, yeah.
My brother-in-law saw the replay. I missed it. He said that it looked like there was a little bit of holding going on by the Pats.
It's holding on every play.
So, like, there's moments there where you just look and go, really? No flag? But, look, AFC title game, you got the lead, 10 points. By the way, New England, I stole this from Rich Eisen, who tweeted this out. New England is 3-4 in the last 10 years, trailing by 10 points or more in the fourth quarter of a game. 3-4. In that same span, the rest of the league is 3-70. So there's some eye-opening numbers to be had from moments like that. Well, New England's in the Super Bowl, and they face Nick Foles and the Philadelphia Eagles. What do we make of the NFC title game? Kind of a snooze fest, but can Nick Foles pull off an upset?
Next. Hey, at some point today, we're going to bring you Eagles fans losing their S all over TV last night.
Fly, Eagles, fly.
I found a video yesterday. Barstool tweeted it out. A Viking fan losing it in front of, like, his girlfriend or wife.
What percentage of those do you think are fake?
More than 75% of them, yeah.
I don't know. Eagles fans?
No, this is a Viking. Like, I'm talking the angry fan that, like, rips their TV off the wall and like throws Saints it out
fan,
the window.
One Saints fan threw a 60-inch TV off his apartment balcony. I think stuff like that's
fake. I think some of that stuff is staged. I think the people that honestly do it are probably hammered.
Yeah, you drink enough.
So, yeah, we have the Vikings and Eagles. And then somebody, I believe, texts us in. How about the pre-teaser for the AFC title game?
The Malkovich teaser.
Incredibly well done. I loved it. And we'll bring that to you today as well. But the NFC title game ended up being a little bit of a snooze. Because if you drank early and had a big lunch, you got yourself a little napsky. Because Philadelphia trailed 7-0 early after the first possession by Minnesota. And they didn't look back. They scored 38 unanswered points. And utterly dominated the Minnesota Vikings and win the NFC Championship.
Never in a million years did I see this coming. Never in a million years. When Minnesota scored, might I add, with ease on the opening drive, and Case Keenum threw that beautiful touchdown pass, I thought, here we go. I'm feeling great about Vikings -3.5.
And I was thinking the exact opposite.
Right? Like they went through them like Swiss cheese. There was nothing to it. And I thought the route was on. And then you even follow that up with Torrey Smith drops the ball on Philly's first drive. And then Philly has to punt, and they run into the punt returner. It was like everything the first couple of minutes. It was all Minnesota. And I thought the route was on. And then, man, did things flip completely. You know, Nick Foles played the game of his life. And you want to make sure to give him credit. He was on the money all afternoon. And hats off to him for playing like that in the biggest game of his career. To me, though, the biggest story of this ball game was Minnesota's defense. And where the hell were they? Like, we've talked all season and all playoffs about where that defense ranks. Statistically, when you look at it, they're up there with the best in the NFL. Defenses like Jacksonville, and that's what they've rode. That's what they've relied on all season long is their defense. And we've seen it. We saw it in the first half against New Orleans. I know they gave up a lot of points in the second half, but shutting out New Orleans, causing Drew Brees to throw a couple of picks. They were nasty. They'd get after you. To give up 38 points, to give up 24 in the first half, I know one of those touchdowns was a pick six return, but Philly was 10 of 14 on third down. They couldn't stop the run. Foles was ripping them apart. That was the shocker for me. It wasn't just that Philly blew them out. It was the way that they just absolutely shredded that Minnesota defense that I never saw coming.
Yeah. I mean, the over-under for this game was 39, and Philly almost hit the over-under by themselves. Yeah. So, I mean, you just see Minnesota getting shredded like that. But you point something interesting out. Minnesota, it's easy to question it and wonder what happened. It's hard not to remember that second half last weekend against New Orleans. They weren't good. In fact, I would say they were actually pretty bad because New Orleans had opportunities or they had moments where they needed to go down the field and they needed to score to win a game, particularly the last drive. Guess what they did? They went down 70 yards and went and got their field goal and thought they had won the game. That game was won on a miracle freak play. And you and I were rooting for the Vikings, you know, want to see Minnesota Viking fan. They've gone through so much, a lot of agony. But their defense just has not been good the last three halves of football. And so you look at a group that was third, I believe, in third down conversions defensively.
Right.
Giving up 71% of the third downs against Philadelphia.
It felt like every time Philly needed either a second long or third down conversion, they would get like 2 yards past what they needed. Every single time. They'd run those routes. He'd run right to the sticks, turn around, he'd hit you. There you go, first down. It was like clockwork for Philly.
Nick Foles led scoring drives of 75, 76, 60, 75, and 88. Listen to that. Yeah. 75, 76, 75, and 88 yard scoring drives led by Nick Foles.
Well, and you know, the other thing I was just watching the first half of that game especially, and I mentioned this a lot last week, was turnovers. And it's funny because I flipped it. I thought Foles was the one that would be turning the football over, not Case Keenum, even though he's had a history of that. But that really, to me, that was the swinging momentum in this football game because he had a close one early. Minnesota scored that first touchdown. I want to say it was 7-7 or whatever. Or no, I think
it was 7-0. It was 7-0. The first possession of the game for Minnesota.
And then they throw. Well, and then they throw. Yeah.
Then he had the pick six.
The pick six, which wasn't his fault. I mean, his arm got hit and it fluttered right to the guy. He runs it back.
Can you block Chris Long, please?
That would be a good idea. And then the other one, they finally put another drive together. It felt like after a handful of three and outs, they got all the way down into Philly territory and they're about to either kick a field goal or score a touchdown. Boom, off the edge, fumble, Philly gets it. Philly ends up scoring to close out the first half, make it 24-7. I think without those two turnovers, maybe you have a different ball game in the second half, but when those two things happen, it just snowballed on them, and then Minnesota couldn't throw their way back into the game.
Well, I think you give a lot of credit today. Obviously, Nick Foles deserves almost all of the headlines. When you go out and you play the way that he did, and you know, people like yourself, not to call you out, but people like yourself, a lot of people in this country were calling that guy out and said, well, it's going to run out at some point. It may in the Super Bowl, but going into that game, they didn't really stand a chance to a lot of people. And he went out and played well, but I give a lot of credit to Jim Schwartz. This is what we know as people who watch a lot of football but don't study tape and stuff. We know X amount of plays to start a game are scripted. I'm pretty convinced Minnesota's plays on that first opening drive, all scripted.
Fairly scripted, yeah.
And they were really well executed, and they got the touchdown. After that, Philadelphia made the adjustments. They couldn't do anything offensively. Minnesota could not move the ball on that Eagles defense. And so, as much as we want to give credit to this guy and this group, you give Jim Schwartz a lot of credit for it because he really made the adjustments possible, and that Eagles defense was nasty. Here's Mike Zimmer post-game, Minnesota falling to Philly in the NFC title game.
Credit to Philadelphia. They got after us pretty good tonight. We didn't do enough good things. A lot of things that didn't normally happen to us throughout the course of the year. A lot of things that we were very good at. We turned the ball over. We didn't get them out on third down. We gave up big plays.
Yeah. I mean, that's the difference. And Doug Peterson, by the way, who proclaimed his Philadelphia Eagles team to look a lot like the team that won the Super Bowl in Green Bay. And that upset some people. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. I was like, careful what you say. Mm-hmm. Well, they're in the Super Bowl. He got that group there, and this is his thoughts after they won the NFC.
It's kind of surreal. I love coaching this football team. I love coaching those players in there. We you know, it's a tremendous feeling, quite honestly. I mean, it just really hasn't sunk in. I mean, it's thing is about this team is all the adversity and, you know, negativity or whatever that surrounds the team. These guys don't listen to that, and I don't listen to that. And they come to work and practice hard every day, and they love being around each other. And, you know, and that was part of 2 years ago when I came was having that type of culture in the building where people enjoyed coming to work. And our players and coaches really enjoy that, and they love being around each other. And obviously this is one of our goals, you know, to be the NFC champion and then represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. So we got our work cut out for us, and just so excited for the guys.
Yeah. What you saw in the first game that didn't pan out, you saw in the second game and it did. Time of possession. Jacksonville dominated time of possession. They still lose. Philadelphia dominated time possession, and they win. They had it 34 minutes to 25.
Yeah, and that really has been the story about Philly here the entire season for me. It's the coaching staff and the job that they've done. Defensively especially, they've been great all season. Doug Peterson, he was one of those coaches, I think you go back and you look at when he was hired, and nobody really made much of it. He was an Andy Reid disciple. You're just going back to the Andy Reid days. He's replacing Chip Kelly. We didn't really make a whole lot of it, but here he is, kind of the last one standing of that coaching group that got hired. Now he's in the Super Bowl. And the way that they've gotten Nick Foles to play the last 2 weeks, I think is one of the best coaching jobs we've seen in a long time in the NFL, because Foles was not great at the end of the regular season. He was really bad in those last two games outside of the Giants' comeback in his first start. And they had a bye week to get him ready. And, man, he has been fantastic. But the other thing that I noticed as well, and you know, we'll see if things change here in the Super Bowl, but the offensive line performance to me was a story in this game as well, and it has been throughout most of the playoffs for these squads. But Philly did a good job of protecting Nick Foles. He had a lot of time to throw. He was good at moving around and creating space for himself inside the pocket. And Case Keenum, I know Philly only had the one technically sack, but the strip sack they also had. They had the deflection that caused the interception. It felt like they were in his kitchen the entire ball game, and he was uncomfortable in the pocket all night. They couldn't get the running game going consistently. McKinnon only had 40 yards. Murray only had 18. The offensive line was another underrated story from that game.
Well, we got a rematch of the 04 Super Bowl, New England and Philadelphia. A lot of people last week said no matter what, they're rooting against New England. But then Philadelphia won, and everybody saw how Philadelphia reacted. Some really unclassy things that they did. has it swayed you a little bit? Are you pulling for New England to beat Philadelphia in the Super Bowl, or are you going with the underdog? And are we making a mistake anointing the Pats the Super Bowl champ, considering what Philly has done in the playoffs? That's next on The Fan. Well, in a matter of like 5 days, we went from what felt like please anybody but New England to please New England beat Philadelphia and their fan base, because Eagles fans went crazy. And we'll play some audio for you here on the show, but Eagles fans went crazy. They were mean to the Vikings players. They were leaving in the bus. And
see what they did to the 100-year-old fan?
Remember that? Yeah, I did. Millie?
Millie, she's like 97 or whatever.
Yeah.
She's been traveling around at the game.
Well, it was her first game, was the playoff game against the Saints. Yeah. She'd never been to a Viking game.
What'd you expect from Eagles fans? They boo Santa Claus.
This is my point in rooting against the Eagles.
So has your mind changed? Because you were pretty adamant last week that you would completely flip your argument if it was New England and Philly. Because you were rooting hard against Philly.
Okay, as a lifelong Cowboys fan, there's no way I can muster any sympathy whatsoever to as much as I.
So you're rooting for New England in the Super Bowl.
I'm not rooting for New England.
But if they win, you're going to be a little happier than if Philly won.
I just want to see the Eagles lose and lose badly.
So that means you're rooting for New England.
Rooting for them.
That's the only other alternative. If you want Philly to lose, it means you want New England to win.
Hey, he's not wrong by definition.
You have two teams to choose here.
You're not going crazy for New England to win.
I'm not breaking out, you know, pom-poms in the red and blue and,
you might
go
if that game's
on.
Close.
If it's close, late drive, Brady makes a big throw.
I want to see the Eagles, blow it. Just tank it. Do something stupid and horrific rather than Brady leading another fourth quarter comeback and miraculous. We've seen that. Okay, you're good. You're the GOAT. We get it.
Is that because Philly now has two times the playoff wins as your Cowboys since 96, just in one playoff run?
Well, we still have, five Super Bowl championships and Lombardi trophies, sure. So Eagles.
Yeah. Nick Foles could win one.
Yeah. I mean, you never know. No, but doesn't it feel like we've switched now? We as sports fans?
Extent. Yeah, it does to a certain extent.
And you're going New England.
No, I'm not going to root for New England.
I don't buy it.
I'm going to root for Philly to win.
You said you were going for Jacksonville last week. You're going against New England. And you ended up rooting for New England.
See, that's different, though, because now this is the final game. Like, I didn't want to see Jacksonville play in the Super Bowl, because then I'd have to watch Jacksonville versus
play in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, then that would
be
the reward.
No, I didn't want that either.
This is the last game of the season, so if I have no problem if New England loses.
I was really disappointed in the Vikings' lack of ability to do anything. Because I thought the Vikings-Patriots would have been the best.
They got shut down, man. Philly's good. And here's the other thing, too. We're getting people that are texting in, I was totally going to root for Philly, totally rooting for Philly, and now people are saying that it's swayed them. It's a titleless town. Like, they won the NFL championship in 1960. They haven't won a Super Bowl. That's all we care about is a Super Bowl.
No.
So they're Super Bowl-less.
They've won one World Series.
One World Series, and their Stanley Cup came in 73.
Yeah, they haven't won a Stanley Cup in a long time.
The thing about Philly that I wonder is, are we making a mistake kind of already anointing New England? And if you don't think we are, I think you're crazy.
I'm surprised the line was not bigger. Everybody's saying,
touchdown line in the Super Bowl.
It's less than a touchdown. I can't believe it was bigger.
It opened at six. That's a touchdown line.
I thought it was going to open at 8.5 or 9.5.
Yeah, I thought we were staring at it there.
We're all doing
it again.
That's a credit to
the Eagles defense. That's what that is.
Well, it's also a non-trust factor in Nick Foles. Can Nick Foles play the game of his life again?
I don't think he needs to play the game of his life.
They have to run the football.
No. Yeah, it's just, with Nick Foles, the way he's playing, it's like there's a reason he hasn't been starting the last couple of years in the NFL. If he was always playing like this, he would have a starting job.
Well, did you read the MMQB?
What did the MMQB say?
Nick Foles had no confidence from anybody around him. His coaching staffs, nobody believed in Nick Foles, lost confidence.
Oh, okay.
So now he's in Philly, and Wentz is backing him up. Peterson's good.
So he's going to suck again next year when they cut bait with him and another team wants him and they don't give him the same level of confidence?
Why would they cut bait? He's a good backup.
That's a terrible excuse. He didn't have confidence. They've done a great job, and he has played the games of his life for the last 2 weeks. But... Are you willing to gamble on that happening again? Or are you willing to gamble on Tom Brady winning another Super Bowl? I totally understand why people are sticking with the way they felt last week despite that performance in the NFC Championship game.
So if Nick Foles puts up the line that he put up against Minnesota, where would you wager your bet of who wins the game? Let's say it's the same line that he had yesterday in the title game.
Same line from Nick Foles.
346, three touchdowns.
No interceptions.
No interceptions.
Does Brady have the same line too?
No, I'm just going with Foles here. Oh, okay. You have to wager based on just Nick Foles'
line. If he plays like that, yeah, I'd be okay gambling with Philly winning the game because of the way they can play defensively and because of the pressure they can create up front. I just am not willing to gamble on him playing like that again. I'll die on that hill for a third straight week. It's been fun to watch him play way over his head. It has been. He's a good guy, and I'm happy he's having the moment of his career. But I'm not willing to wager on it again.
Yeah, this listener says, need more dogs. Philly covers. New England isn't as good as we think. Beat two garbage teams to get their close game coming. And that's what I wonder is if that defense against Minnesota, man, I did not see them holding Minnesota to 7 points. If we're going to get that defense, it's not easy to dismiss Philadelphia's chances here.
I don't like just simply calling Jacksonville garbage.
I'm not condoning everything in that text. Jacksonville's a good team.
Tennessee is not a great football team, but they blew them out. Let's not act like they just eked by. They gave up an early touchdown, and outside of that, they dominated that game from start to finish, and it was over basically at the half. Jacksonville, especially defensively, is a really good football team, and they, let's not forget, just went into Pittsburgh and hung 45 points up on the Steelers, forcing a bunch of turnovers. That's not a garbage football team, and to me, that was a quality win. And one, by the way, that they needed to come back and score 14 points in the fourth quarter to do it. So that's where I think you got to make sure to give New England some credit here for the way that they played and not just overreact to it simply being Jacksonville.
Right, and Philly, though, to their credit, beat the team a lot of people thought was going to maybe surprisingly win the NFC in Atlanta.
They did.
And utterly dominated Minnesota. So, you know, Foles, Brady, that's not sexy. But maybe that Philly defense versus Brady is.
The one thing I'm going to be thinking about for the next 2 weeks is how exciting is this Super Bowl if Carson Wentz is playing?
Oh, my God.
The storylines, the intrigue, everything so much is better. Drastically different if Carson Wentz is playing in this football game.
Yeah, it is. So we got Philly and New England. A loaded second hour is ahead. The Blazers are included in some juicy rumors with the trade deadline. And they're also winning games. They've won 3 in a row. So we'll discuss that. Want to dive into Jacksonville and Minnesota. Haven't specifically talked about either one of those franchises. Are both those teams going to be back next season? A lot of people like to say that. Well, they'll be back next year. Do we buy that? But we'll start hour two with our NFL whip around. Mariota has his new coach. How will it work out for Tennessee? Dirt and Sprague with you on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.